All right, I'm going to read this one. And then I'm going to tell you what Wills wants to say about it. We're in 1 Kings 9, 1 through 9. This is the promise to Solomon of the Davidic covenant. When Solomon had finished building the house of the Lord and the king's house and all that Solomon had desired to build, the Lord appeared to Solomon a second time as he appeared to him at Gibeon. The Lord said to him, "I have heard your prayer and your plea, which you made before me. I have consecrated this house which you have built and put my name there forever. My eyes and my heart will be there for all time. As for you, if you will walk before me as David your father walked, with integrity of heart and uprightness, doing according to all that I have commanded you, and keeping my statutes and my ordinances, then I will establish your royal throne over Israel forever, as I promised your father David, saying, there shall not fail you a successor on the throne. If you turn aside from following me, you or your children, and do not keep my commandments and my statutes that I have set before you, but go and serve other gods and worship them, then I will cut Israel off from the land that I have given them, and the house that I have consecrated for my name I will cast out of my sight. And Israel will become a proverb and a taunt among all peoples. This house will become a heap of ruins. Everyone passing by it will be astonished and will hiss, and they will say, 'Why has the Lord done such a thing to this land and to this house?' Then they will say, 'Because they have forsaken the Lord their God, who brought their ancestors out of the land of Egypt and embraced other gods, worshiping them and serving them. Therefore, the Lord has brought this disaster upon them.'" Friends, this is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. I'm not sure how to get this into things, so we're going to try one more thing and see. Mads, can you unmute the mic over here?
I chose this passage because it shows that as long as God's people are loyal, everything goes well. But if not, then there will be problems. This is a conditional covenant. It can be a threat or a promise of a better life.
Wills is all tied up about the word if in this passage. So when we get the first covenant passage, the one from 2 Samuel, there is no if. When Samuel is talking to David, there is no condition. God is going to do this. What God is going to do is have David's son build a temple, have David's son start a house, have David's son start a lineage and a promise, and continue on. When we get to 1 Kings, when God is talking to that son, Solomon, not the first son, but the chosen son, suddenly the word if comes into the equation. If you keep my commandments, if you follow. And Wills's question here is tied up in the, "Well, I thought God loved us all the time" thing. What's this if thing? How good do I have to be? In his original email to me, he said, "This passage really sounds kind of Old Testament-y. If the people are good, then all these blessings will happen." And he puts in the email, "If not, then dot, dot, dot." And this really flows into the overwhelming question of covenants in our faith. It's a central piece of faith for us, the idea of covenant. When we talk about covenants as being reciprocal, that there's multiple parties and both parties have a responsibility, except both parties always don't have a responsibility. So we have many covenants. We have the covenant with Noah. The people of God have nothing to do in that covenant. God says, "I'm going to make a covenant with you today that I am never going to destroy the world with water again. And I'm going to hang a rainbow up in the sky to remind me," God says, "of this covenant." Noah has nothing to do with that. Noah's family has nothing to do with that. That is a God saying to Noah, "This is what I'm going to do." God comes to Abraham. And essentially, depending on which conversation we're dealing with Abraham, It's again a one-way promise. You're going to be my God. I'm going to be your God. You're going to be my people. You're going to go where I tell you to go, but know that blessings are going to follow and you are going to have multiple offspring. And through your family, you are going to be blessed to be a blessing. Moses holds the tablets of the covenant on top of Mount Sinai, even as the people are breaking them before they even know they're breaking them at the bottom of the mountain. You may remember that Moses quite literally breaks the covenant when he comes down and smashes them on the ground and has to go back up for a replacement set of tablets. That's a covenant. We have this covenant with David as it plays out with Solomon. We have the covenant made real in a different way in Jesus Christ as well. So we have all of these covenants, and some of them have the people, us, that's us, that's the people of God, that's us, with duties and responsibilities and roles. And other times God just says, here's what I'm going to do for you. And we end up with this challenge because not all of them are the same and not all the promises are true. And ultimately, it isn't that not all the promises are true. It's that we often interpret them as not happening the way God makes them happen. You guys are familiar with that concept, right? You pray for one thing and God answers it another way. And so we end up in a place where we wonder about God. Ultimately, we spend a lot of time talking about grace. We as Presbyterians spend a lot of time talking about grace. And grace is defined, as you've heard me say, as we Presbyterians have said for 400 some odd years, is God's free gift that we do not deserve and cannot earn. So the then part of this has nothing to do with it. The if part of this has nothing to do with it. And that's, I think, sometimes where we get stuck, is that we are so bound up in grace that we want to toss out if then. I'm going to retreat to a powerful theologian's famous quote, the theologian Jimmy Buffett, who says that there's a thin line between Saturday night and Sunday morning. And we are aware that in the world, we see people do one thing on Saturday night and do another on Sunday morning. And part of our ultimate question is, how does being in covenant relationship with God change who we are and how we are in the world? That is ultimately what we're getting at when we struggle with the if then and the how good do I have to be. Now, I grew up in part of the world known very soundly as the Bible Belt. And I had friends who went to churches where the list of things you shouldn't do was pretty long, and the consequences were pretty severe. If you did any of these things, you were going to burn in hell for eternity. That is one way to read a covenant. That is the then part that Wills highlighted earlier. Then all these things will happen. I have to tell you, it didn't stop 13 to 18-year-old kids from doing any of those things. Were we afraid? I don't know. Were we appropriately afraid? Probably not. Did it change who we are? No. We were still 13 to 18-year-old smart-mouth teenagers. Sorry, guys, that's just who we were. Probably that's who some of you were as well. But what changed for me was when I learned that my performance did not demand a certain response from God. Me showing up at church 52 Sundays in a row did not mean God had to give me the winning lotto ticket. flip side of that is me missing church 8 weeks in a row did not mean I was no longer God's beloved child. Dietrich Bonhoeffer would caution us about cheap grace, about the idea that there is no cost to us in what Jesus Christ has done, in what God has done for the world through Jesus Christ. And I would caution us about that too. But I would say that if we get caught in the trap of cheap grace, it is because we have already decided not to truly follow God, to not take seriously who God is and how God is in the world and what God is doing in the world. Not just what God has done, but what God is doing. Our Presbyterian language around this in the last 10 or 15 years has changed so that we talk about grace and gratitude. We respond to God's gift of grace with gratitude. What does that look like? Well, it looks like a lot of different things. It looks like Dan, who is now retired, I think, 6 times, starting up another counseling practice out of the blessing box because he doesn't really retire well. It looks like Jean, young lady that she is, who is caring for the elders in the community by taking Betty Ridgely lunch. It looks like Granger. I'm not sure it looks like Granger. It is Granger working with young people, helping them find and dig through to see if something they like to do is something they're talented at, and if they can transform a like into a passion, into a skill. It looks like 5 guys, 2 of them on a ladder, 3 of them who should not be lifting a 70-pound TV, hoisting a TV onto the wall. Our response to grace should be as common and every day as we find grace to be in our lives. And I don't mean that it's not special or not wonderful or anything, but we should see grace a lot. I don't know if you caught it, but in that passage from Samuel, God does not tell Samuel to say to David, "If your people commit iniquity." It's when your people commit iniquity. God knows us pretty well. And so we know that we fall short. We know that we make mistakes in word and deed every day of our lives. And we experience the grace of God every day of our lives. And the power of this covenantal relationship is that we want, we aspire, we desire to be the people that God made us to be, which is not always the people we are. You may recall that there's this disciple named Peter. I mean, Jesus calls him Satan at one point in the Bible. That's probably not a great name to have. And by the end of it, he is the apostle to the Gentiles. He is the proclaimer of the story on Pentecost. He is the first. He wins the blue ribbon in the race to the empty tomb on Easter. Isn't that just wonderful? And it's not because he wins the race. And it's not because he steps up. All of that is made possible by the grace of God. Our big theological word for today is prevenient. And we use it tied to the word grace, prevenient grace. And it means that grace always comes first. Everything we do and everything we are is a response to the grace of God. If we read this passage in Kings carefully, we will see that the if section is if the people turn away, If the people go after other gods, if the people follow, worship, and serve other gods, then I will throw them out of the land that I have promised. Then this house that you're about to build, Solomon hasn't built it yet at this point, will be ruined. Those things happen. The people go into exile. The northern kingdom falls, the southern kingdom falls. The people go into exile. Solomon's temple is destroyed to the ground. The ruins that we see in Jerusalem today are the second temple ruins. It's not a threat as much as it is a consequence. And that consequence is true, but at no point does God say to Solomon, and I will wash my hands of you, and I will be done with you, and no longer will you be my people, and no longer will I be your God. If you choose to go after other gods, this is what's going to happen. God does not yank God's steadfast love from the lineage of David as he does from Saul. What's our covenant that we make in this church? We make a covenant of baptism, right? That we are claimed, that we are named, that we are loved by, and that we belong to God. And if it's an infant, the parents answer for them. If it's an older child or an adult, then they have to answer for themselves that they do turn from evil. They renounce evil and its power in the world, and that they turn to Jesus Christ. And then we, the church gathered here, have to answer questions as well, that we will raise this person in the faith, that we will tell them the stories of Jesus, that we will be with them in worship, in prayer, in struggle, in strife, and in celebration. And when we ask and answer that question, we sit here and we look around the room and we realize sometimes we've done it greatly and sometimes we've done it poorly. And we are reminded again of that covenant that we have made time after time. The covenants God makes with us, quite simply, are aspirational. They are to get us to do more and do better. But God's love is not contingent on us doing more and doing better. We are stuck with God. And God chooses to be stuck with us. And so as we go out into the world, one of our conversations this morning in Sunday school was that we should be looking for grace every day, that we should be trying to see the examples of God's grace breaking into and changing our world and our lives every day, and that we should be looking for ways in which we can respond to the love of God every day. Because this is that big a deal. We know that Solomon, the man who prays for wisdom and then has something like 700 wives, that is not a wise thing to do, will build the temple. We know that his temple will fall. We know that his lineage will continue to be on the throne. And we as people of Christ hold these covenantal promises to be fully realized in Jesus Christ. And because of that, we know that God has never actually left the people. Because we know the rest of the story, we have something like 2,000 years of history to have this conversation around God's faithfulness. And that allows us to speak to faithfulness and grace and steadfast love and mercy in a different way. So the if is problematic. If we believe there's a chance God will walk out on us. God's track record proves that God ain't going anywhere. How do we respond to that is ultimately the question. And it is the challenge of covenant for us to respond to the fullness of God's grace and love with everything we have and everything we are. And as Jesus will tell us, to do that even to our enemy. You are indeed a child of God. You are indeed a beloved child of the covenant. And the next time we do a baptism, Zach, you are the last one I walk down the aisles here and introduced as the newest child of the covenant. Hear the power in the language of being a child of the covenant with God. To God alone be the glory this day and forevermore. Amen.